welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, Franny Nance, former member of Charismania. Franny, it's good to be back and to continue on our discussion about deliverance ministry. It is such a crazy thread that's woven through, and I don't know if you watch the comments or not, but you have these people that are angry that deliverance ministry has destroyed their lives. And then you have this other group that are, they're all excited and trying to defend it. And most of what we talk about is just the facts that are pure, simple facts, right? Well, among the facts, I haven't even shared this with you. I dug out my Randy Clark Global Awakening Ministry Training Manual. And this is, if I was a kid and I was playing Dungeons and Dragons, this might be a really fun book. But for adults, I'm wondering how far you can really go with this and not consider it insanity.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Yeah, it's funny. We, growing up, had books and all kinds of stuff, manuals, classes were offered. And when I was researching, just kind of looking back, I went on to, Randy Clark's website, and he's got all kinds of, it's just like Bethel too, like School of Supernatural Ministry, where they're like, well, we'll teach you how to walk you through how to do deliverance and healings or whatnot. But based on our, our past conversations, I saw that you'd shared some topics with me, and one was Randy Clark and deliverance ministry. And that stood out to me because, my family, we went up to Toronto for the Toronto Blessing, that revival in the 90s, many times, and even in the early 2000s. And I, during the research, Randy Clark is the one kind of like credited, with the revival kicking off in Toronto. And anyway, it's just kind of interesting. So I thought, we could kind of talk through this and where, who made Randy Clark the authority on deliverance, and where did he get his deliverance ministry influence from, and how did he develop this manual? And if you pull the thread, you can see his, because, Randy's pretty tightly aligned with Bethel. And Bethel has, like, I'm sure you've heard of it, their SOZO. It's like their inner healing. And that they say that comes from, their trainings with Randy Clark. And so it's like, well, where did Randy Clark get his stuff from? And so anyway, it's just been kind of an interesting thing to kind of pull that thread. So,
and it's such a weird thread to pull. I have been studying everything before the 1980s, trying to piece together basically what happened to the group that I was in that we escaped from. And then there's this weird point in history that not many people talk about. When William Branham died, because of his influence on the entire movement, suddenly it was though there was this dam holding back all of this weird mess. Suddenly the dam broke when he died. And it wasn't that he was holding it back so much as once he died, they had to try to figure out who's the next leader. And I don't believe that they ever figured that out. And so what happened is you had this, I hate to say it, there were a bunch of wolves among the sheep, and all of these wolves tried to claim their superior power. I don't know that I would put Randy in that category, but he's the result of some of the things that emerged after Branhamism. Interestingly, the things that emerged after really came from Branhamism. When you think of Randy Clark, you have to think of things like, what's his name? Rodney Howard Brown, I think
it is. Yes.
The Holy Laughter, right?
Yeah.
Well, you can trace the Holy Laughter all the way back through this group, all the way back to Azusa Street. So it's nothing new with them, but they all carry this lineage. And someone recently asked me, can I make a diagram of all these new ministries, how they relate back? And I got to thinking about it one day, and I think I may have mentioned this in a podcast. It would be better just to take a paint gun and shoot this big splatter mess.
100%.
What happened, as far as what I can tell, when Branham died, the shepherding movement was a bridge to all of these other things happening. When I think of the shepherding movement, I go back to the point in time when Wimber was trying to kind of hold it together, bring unity to the crowds. Well, the shepherding movement and plus the unity once you bring those two together, now you've got unity among the networks. So whenever I think of Randy Clark, I'm thinking more of the network side of it. Mm-hmm. All these networks emerged, and they're paving pathways that come out of what Branham and Gordon Lindsay created, but they are somewhat new and different to me.
No, same here. It's interesting. I do want to say, I think people, you know, whatever, people have their opinions and you can be feel defensive. However, this is a hard concept and it's like a hard one for me to understand too. But a lot of times especially in these systems, you know, we're not saying like, boy, John Wimber was evil, or like, you know, Randy Clark was scheming, you know, like, how can I make money and, you know, deceive people or whatever. Now, there are some people in this movement that probably are that way, but they are a product, like you were saying, of the system. And so, you know, you would challenge people that if they feel defensive over, you know, a person like, oh my gosh, you know, John Wimber was amazing, or Randy Clark, you know, I think he's amazing. I'm not saying he's not amazing. What I'm saying is, like, these people, they are trained within the system and they get a level of notoriety, of power, and they might have even, in my opinion, sort of deluded themselves that they are, you know, helping people, that, you know, they're, you know, pushing the gospel forward and doing what God's called them to do. But however, like, when you look at the fruit, and actually I think it was another John that you had on your podcast that was sort of talking about, where people, oh, look at the fruit. Well, the fruit isn't the large ministry, like, or like how much money you're making. The fruit is actually following up on, like, how many people actually were, like, healed or delivered and then maintained that through your ministry. And I'm sure there's going to be people, like, in the comments or whatever, like, you know, I received inner healing and I received deliverance at these, you know, and I was set free. And I would say, like, I have gone through deliverance. I've had, you know, experienced manifestations. I would say that I was not, like, it was that it kind of kept me in that loop of that addictive feedback loop or whatever it is. And again, I know that's not something that people want to hear. But anyway, so that's kind of what we're unpacking, like, a lot of these men and women in these movements, that a lot of times, like you're saying, when William Branham died or whoever, there's a vacuum. And a lot of times there's always a person. Someone, and a lot of times too, I would say, I've heard you say this too, John, where, you know, we hold a lot of the members of the system. It's not necessarily even the leaders, but it's the people who are in these systems that continue to perpetuate it as well, and put these people on a pedestal and look to them, and so it just kind of continues this or whatever. So yeah, you know, that's kind of where I'm coming from. It's interesting with Randy Clark, like you mentioned, Rodney Howard Brown. And so, as you know, I'm sort of diving in, Randy credits Rodney Howard Brown with, you know, him receiving the Holy Spirit. And actually, Randy Clark is saying, like, you know, I had to fight, like, a denominational spirit. God told me I had a denominational spirit, you know, that kept me closed off to Rodney Howard Brown. And so I'm just like, even that phrase in and of itself, again, I've heard that too. It's like, oh, you have a religious demon or something like that, kind of goes into and feeds into that narrative, where it's another way of shutting off your critical thinking, in my opinion. You know, you have a religious demon. It's like, well, I mean, I can ask a question and think something's weird and not, like, completely dive in. I'm not sinning and I don't have a demon. So anyway, I thought that was interesting too. And then, of course, like you were saying, Rodney Howard Brown is connected to Kenneth Hagin, Rhema, you know, all that word of faith stuff. And of course, Kenneth Hagin then plagiarized a lot of, like, E.W. Kenyon, I think that's the name or whatnot. So yes, like, your paint splatter analogy is perfect, because it's just like a big ball of tangled yarn of all these people. You can pull a string, and that's what was happening. I was trying to, like, minimize, you know, the kind of because I was curious, because I've been to Toronto, and it was just sort of, you follow these different paths, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, Randy Clark was connected to this person, and a lot of, you know, Randy Clark, and we can talk about it more, but he developed his deliverance ministry manuals from revivalist in Argentina. I can't remember his name. I wrote it down. And he came across that person in Argentina from, I think it was like a professor at Fuller Theological Seminary connected to C. Peter Wagner that then, you know, introduced Randy. You got to see what this guy's doing down in, you know, Argentina. They've had like tens of thousands of deliverances. And so it's like, of course, I read that and my radar goes up of like, well, how are they tracking this? How do they know? You know, what is, so anyways, it's, you know, yeah, there's a lot that you can unpack, but it is kind of like, well, who made Randy Clark the authority on deliverance? And I think what's frustrating too is a lot of these people in this movement, I mean, it's not just the charismatic movement in NAR. You can see it in other dysfunctional systems. They don't necessarily want to be held accountable. So they will say, you know, well, I'm not the authority. You know, God brought me this, or, you know, this is what worked for us. Well, it's like, well, at some point you do become the authority and have to be held accountable for it because you have developed this deliverance ministry format manual that you then teach to other people that has then influenced other ministries that then they use that to develop their inner healing or deliverance. And then you sell courses and books, you know, on how to teach people, how to walk people through deliverance. And so, yeah, you should be held accountable for that. And you can't like slough it off with like, well, I didn't say I was the end all be all authority on this, but it's like, we'll look at the fruit of, you know, like where this is developed and where it's gone.
I always come at it in a completely different angle because of knowing people who got trapped in the system. And the system is really the fault. It's not usually mm-hmm. the person. But if you look at the concept of revival as it is presented today, you don't find anything like it in the Bible. There's nothing that says you must gather people and have a big revival. In fact, it says where two or three are gathered, I'll be there. And I'm also coming from the perspective of somebody who understands what you feel when you go through these things. Mm-hmm. I was raised in it. I know what it's like. You get the dopamine hit that you get yes. whenever this happens. Yes. And you feel something. You really mm-hmm. do. And I'm not going to say that it's true or false. What I'm saying is there are people who get so caught up that if it's just dopamine, they can't really recognize it because they're part of the system. Mm-hmm. Worse, so you talked about the tens of thousands of people or whatever in South America. Ministers were doing this left and right because this was a great gimmick. If you can get an evangelist to go to a nation where there are a large number of poor people, mm-hmm. and say, we're going to have this big revival, this meeting, there'll be food, drinks, accommodations, etc. You're going to get all kinds of people who come just because that's mm-hmm. what people do. They want a handout, right? And at the same time, many of those people are very sincere. Some of them may need deliverance from something, healing or whatever. So you have a wide variety of people. Some of those people have the ambition to become bigger than they are, and they want to create a name for themselves, and they see how easy it is. Mm-hmm. And this is a system that tells everybody that you too can do this, all the way down to the youth. You too and the youth can do this. Well, what that does is it inspires the youth to join and become part of the system, and then sell books, sell conventions, just like you're talking about. And from the youth, you probably have a good outlook, a good perspective. But as you get caught up into the system, it is a system that has to continue to grow because the way they pitch the revival movement is that it is a movement that's gaining steam. Mm-hmm. And so as it's trying to grow, you have to have these massive numbers. If you don't, you're not gaining steam. Everything you said was false. So you have to, I hate to say it, but there are people who are in the movement who have to generate miracles. Mm-hmm. And we've seen quite a few examples of this. It gets really weird because at the same time, I know that I can point out different things that were staged, different acts that were not real. But the people who are doing it believe they're doing it for a good cause, because if they can trick the audience into thinking it's real, then they're tricking the audience into a hype where they too can get some feeling, some dopamine hit. Some people actually do get better. And there is a documentary out there by Darren Brown, Miracles for Sale, I think it's called, where he invites this entire crowd to his faith healing ministry. He's an atheist, but he gets on stage and he does the act, he does the show, and there are people who claim to have been healed by the atheist. Mm-hmm. For me, it shows that there is a problem in that they're being taught in this system that they have to go to a human source, and that's really not biblical when you think about it.
No, it's not at all. And I think that's been a major theme with the various guests you have on. And I listened to your podcast. That's so good. And that just what you said as far as pointing out it's the system itself and the system is broken. You know, there's a mega church around here. There's a lot of mega churches, but there's one in particular that, and of course, I live in Northern California, so I'm not that far from Redding. I'm in Sacramento. And so it was funny. We tried a non-denominational church, and there was, you know, one service where they actually had someone from Jesus Culture, a pastor of Jesus Culture Sacramento, come preach, and I was like, "We're done." but back to your system thing, it's the idea that people try to so hard to defend the system because the pastor of that church was, you know, when the whole all the revelations about Sean Bowles came out, he was very defensive. You know, he was like, "Oh, well, this is a net win for the kingdom because look, like God's, they're taking accountability." And I'm like, no, they're not. This is not a net win for the kingdom. But it's basically, it's like the system and it's kind of attitudes like that that continue to perpetuate that. And I know that's like a hard thing for people to hear because I think that's what I've grappled with. Like growing up, I'm like, okay, well, someone gave me this prophetic word and I felt it and I like cried and I like manifested and, you know, really stood on it. Or I was really tormented and this person prayed for deliverance for me and I felt the manifestation. And I cried and cried and cried and or I saw like people going through deliverance or, you know, manifesting, you know, whatever it is. And I've really had to kind of grapple with that because it's like, well, what was that? And this is my opinion, but you do, if you start to research other movements, even outside of Christianity, because that's kind of what I was looking at too. It's like, well, in this Argentina, it's like, well, 30,000 people are delivered from, well, how do you know? Like what? And then, so it's like, well, what is the, you know, what is the data that you're using to, well, they had all these manifestations. Well, why? And so then I'm like, well, why are these people manifesting? Cause I wasn't faking, you know, like, and if you, again, like there's actually a study and I'll send it to you. I'm trying to remember it, but there's this cult, the Kundalini yoga cult. I'd never heard of that other than repenting for Kundalini yoga and like a whatever deliverance sheet that I had to read through. And I was like, what is that? But if you, they had similar manifestations in the Kundalini yoga cult to what Toronto, the manifestations at the Toronto revival. And that was very interesting to me. And so you can look at that. There is like the mass psychosis where like, and you've talked about this too on your podcast, where whether it's through music and whatever, you can make yourself susceptible. Also, if you are, you know, I think what's really evil too is a lot of these people, they use religion. It's a deeply held, you know, religious beliefs or relationship with God. So you go in already to these meetings or whatnot with your guard down, trusting these people. Well, they, you know, they're, you know, this person that I trust is promoting this person. And so you already go in with your guard down and then there's music playing. You can whip yourself up into a frenzy. And I know that's hard for people to hear, but it's true. And that's kind of like how, And that's part of the emotional high, that dopamine hit and that addiction that keeps you caught in that feedback loop. And also, a lot of times, too, people coming here for healing or deliverance, you are desperate. Like, you're at a level of brokenness and whether you have a lot of trauma in your past or whatnot, so it makes you even more susceptible to that. And so a lot of, in these deliverance ministries, they are untrained, in my opinion, and they're putting their finger on something that is a deep wound for a person that really is like a dangerous place to go if that person's not ready to address it, or if they're not trained, like the person leading the deliverance isn't truly trained. And I think that it makes it worse if you're telling this person, you know, I've seen it where, you know, a person has been sexually abused in their childhood, and, you know, there's a lot of issues after that that they're dealing with, and they go to these conferences and inner healing where, you know, so they're sharing very deep, very personal and private information out loud to people, you know, kind of being forced, like, tell me what happened to you or whatever. And then it's, you know, this person who, whatever, you know, through their deliverance manual is like, okay, well, you have a soul tie, so you need to repent of that. And like, oh, a demon has been oppressing you and attacking you, you know, from this, and you're holding unforgiveness towards that person. So it's all these things. And it's, you know, so that person, it dredges up that painful memory, that time, and then it adds a level of guilt and like a layer to that person where it's like, well, gosh, I need to forgive this person, or I'm still dealing with this torment from this incident. And a lot of times too with deliverance, it's like, well, you know, we walked you through it, like you should be healed. And it's like, well, I'm still tormented by this. All right, well, we got to do another round. And it just keeps you trapped in that. And sometimes I've seen like it makes people worse. In the last podcast we talked and mentioned I even hate saying doctor. She lost her medical license. Rebecca Brown, if you Google her, it's like, you know, her books, she wrote a lot about like deliverance, and like her claim to fame was like, I brought, you know, a Satanist or a witch out of witchcraft, and we had to do like months of deliverance to get all these demons out of her and break all this oppression. Well, that woman ended up losing her medical license, and then she went crazy. She passed away, but it's like I truly believe that a lot of that, it does kind of, it perpetuates that mental illness, and it keeps you stuck in that system. And then a lot of times these leaders like a Randy Clark or the people at Bethel, you know, they get to go on with their life because they're this itinerant minister. They'll sweep in, do this, you know, deliverance ministry. Oh, we can train you. And they and then sweep out. And then there's no who's left to, you know, pick up the pieces, or, you know, or the poor people that are kind of like, well, you know, what was that? Or what do I do now? Or I'm still tormented. And you had mentioned just growing up in the system, and there's a lot of pressure that are put on kids and, you know, young people that grow up in the system. It's like, well, I shouldn't have any problems because I grew up in this, and I'm equipped with, I know how to do deliverance. I know how to pray for healing. And you get the rush and the feedback in these things because these systems also like glorify like youth. So it's like, oh, this 5-year-old, like come over here and pray for deliverance for this person. Wow, look, the same spirit is in, you know, that raised Christ from the dead is in this 5-year-old, and this is amazing. And so then this 5-year-old gets put on a pedestal, and there's just this pressure of like, remember when you laid hands on so-and-so and they were delivered, you know, why? I don't know. So it's like, now you aren't allowed to have any, I don't know, you're just not allowed to be a person, like figure out who you are and grow up and, you know, develop a sense of self. That's what I'm trying to get at. Like I wasn't able to develop a sense of self outside of this.
I want to go back to something that you said earlier, because it ties into what I'm about to say. You're talking about the denominational spirit. Mm-hmm. That was something that actually came directly from Branhamism. When Latter Rain began, what they were trying to pitch to the world was that the original church had been lost to time. The church that existed today in all of the denominations was basically not a false church, but a falsely structured, false belief set of a church. In other words, people who were trying to be Christians who weren't doing a very good job is what they would say. And because they were doing it in this deliverance ministry style, where everything's an angel or a demon, Well, you have to put a label on it, right? So you have to say that's the denominational spirit, mm-hmm. which simply means to somebody who's out on the outside looking in, trying to understand all of this mess, it just simply means you're in a denomination, mm-hmm. nothing more. But that's how they labeled and branded people. The problem is you're branding people. Once you say this to people, you start to convey to your audience that that person has an evil spirit on them. And so they treat them differently, they act differently, and you're basically branding other Christians in a way that they can't really recover when you're part of this movement. But there's a reason for that, and it goes back to the fact that they try to label everything as being angelic or demonic, one or the other. It has to be. And so you're creating a very black and white world. In the black and white world, the problem is there are often a lot of shades of gray. There are rules, don't do this, and you must do this other thing. But then there are exceptions to those rules in real life, because we understand that they're, not everything is as black and white as they want to paint it. So you get caught up into this black or white mindset. You get dumbfounded for the grays. Once you get into a situation where you are experiencing a gray that you don't understand, that is where the guru comes into effect, the person who's on the stage claiming deliverance ministries. And so what it does is elevate them to a position where they're really governing the Christian body, and they're the ones who are telling people that those denominations have a spirit. So it's this cycle that once you get into it, it's a system that it's really hard to break. You can go back in time and you can find that system all throughout history. It predates Latter Rain. But usually what's odd about it is, if you study the groups that do it, it's usually the cultish groups, mm-hmm. and those that end in destruction. And if you study the early histories of each one of those groups, they actually don't start out that bad. They're just slightly off the mark, right? That, for me, is really the problem with the movement as a whole. It's not that it's so bad, it's just slightly off the mark. And what it does is it continues to generate destructive cults.
100%. Yeah, right on. You're just off enough to continue it. And then if you have, you know, anyone asks a question or even poses like, I don't really agree with that, it's like, well, you have a religious spirit. That's why, you know, it was like, well, they have a religious demon. And it's like, well, these Christians are, I thought you said Christians couldn't be possessed. Well, they're oppressed. That's like another thing too. It's like, oh, well, I guess, yeah, Christians can't be possessed, but they're oppressed. So this person, you know, has a religious spirit, and it does divide you. And I think as a kid, like too, growing up in it, you then take the mindset of like, well, it doesn't leave you open to any sort of like, you know, like, let me think about this. Like, maybe they have a point or whatnot. It's like, no, you know, they're questioning it. And that means, you know, they have a religious spirit. And like, you don't want that. Like, you want all of God, don't you? Don't you want everything that God has? And it isolates. And it also gives you that mindset that like, you have special knowledge. And, you know, and that's, if you look at the, you know, Steve Hassan's bite model or whatever, like that's cult thinking. And I know, you know, a lot of people don't like to hear that. You know, it's like, I'm not in a cult. And it's like, well, like you can look at those groups and find similarities. You know, when I was researching this, I was remembering, I was in eighth grade when we went to Toronto. I think it was 95 or 96. So it had been going for a couple years. And it was just eye-opening as far as, you know, all the weird manifestations you see, whether it's like holy laughter or people making weird animal noises, or it allowed people, I mean, to do really weird, odd behaviors and sort of indulge that, like, whereas like in normal society, you wouldn't normally allow that, or there is some decorum, or just like there's just a way of operating in the world. Like, yes, I know, understand like creativity, but it was just sort of licensing people to just claim like, well, this is a manifestation, like this is God speaking to me. And so if you question, like, you know, I don't really know if that's God, you know, they're like, well, you have a religious spirit. And so a lot of times that was sort of the weapon used against anyone that asked any question. And it also, though, it depended on who was in power, because if the person who's running the meeting is in power and is asking the question, then they're right. But if anyone else is asking, like, well, is that really God? Then you are, you know, you have a religious spirit.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. The other thing is, whenever you get to the roots of this deliverance ministry structure, it's not just the good and the bad, the evil and the angel and the demons, this kind of thing. It is all about, what can I convince the people that they have that they don't know they have? Mm-hmm. For me, that's the funniest part of this, because there are numerous Bible passages where it talks about Christ redeeming us from the law, the curses, the all of the different plagues that can plague humanity. We're redeemed of all of this, which is their primary argument from the inception of the movement. They were saying that your atonement is linked to your salvation and you have both, right? But then they tried to undo what they said by claiming that, well, you're sick because you have a curse. You're sick because you have a family member who did this, that, or the other. Well, I can't control my family member, but right. That's how they do it. I've got in this deliverance manual, one of the things that struck me, which is kind of funny and sad at the same time. I am not a fan of Freemasonry. I think that any secret society should not be secret. There are reasons why that should be, but when people are infected by the movement's indoctrination, it goes beyond what things actually are. And so one of the things that they list here is Freemasonry is actually a religion that competes with Christianity. And it says that basically, if Freemasonry, and I'm reading verbatim, if Freemasonry is present in the family of a person whose healing is difficult, the Freemasonry should be first renounced and all curses related to it be broken. So whether you are in agreement or not about Freemasonry, I don't like it. I think nobody should join it. But I don't think that if you have a family member who was a Mason, I don't think it's going to give you a curse. And if it does, you're serving a God who is so weak that he can't even protect you from what somebody else does. That's the point I'm trying to drive at. And that's just one of many. There are so many different things in here that talk about the curses you can get. I laughed pretty hard. I had to go back and listen again after our last talk when you mentioning being cursed by witches and things like this.
Yeah.
it blows your mind. To somebody who's never been in this, they would look at this and think, what are these people doing? Don't they realize that this is all a fantasy game that they're in? And truly it is. Now, here's the catch. I know people who get caught up in the system and they truly believe these things that they're saying, but they believe it because somebody else told them to believe it. And it goes through this cycle. Somebody tells their son becomes an elder, becomes a leader, they start saying it, and then over time, it is a generational curse. That's the irony of this.
Yes.
But it's a curse in false knowledge. That is the generational curse.
Oh, that's said so perfectly. Yes, that's exactly what it is, in a sense of like a generational curse. And it's kind of the same thing with you know, trauma or whatnot. But yeah, I would say Freemasonry. It's so funny you say that. I feel like that has been like the buzzword that has, you know, stalked me and, you know, our family for whatever, however long we've been in this movement, where it's like, that's the buzzword, you know, oh, they have Freemasonry in our background. And, you know, it is, it's like, if, why, you know, so I have no control over my great-great-grandfather being a Mason. So, but now I'm not receiving healing or, you know, being tormented because of that. okay, fine. Like, so it's like you go through and we would repent and say, you know, break all these curses and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, whatever, there'd still be another issue. And it's like, oh, you need to break it again. I don't know. And so it's like, well, why do we have to keep doing this? And that's a lot of times with these deliverance, they keep you going. It's like, it does remind me kind of like a multi-level marketing scam, in a sense of like, oh, well, now you, in order to unlock this level, you need to do X, Y, and Z, you know, to go deeper. And it's like, oh, and then you'll be healed. It's like, okay, well, I've done this. I'm not healed or set free, you know. Okay, well, that means that this must be this type of curse or devil. So now you need to go even deeper, you know, and it just keeps you stuck and trapped in that system, in that feedback loop. And then especially if you're raised in that.
Yeah, it's a real problem. And I struggle because I know people that get caught up in the system, as I mentioned. The hard part for me is that whenever people find themselves in that system, they're usually, if they've been recently recruited, they've usually been hurt in some way. Mm-hmm. This movement attracts people who have diseases, especially the chronic disease illnesses, people who have mental health issues. And over time, it creates this collection of people that really are looking for something that the denominations can't give them. Mm-hmm. So when they hear phrases like the denominational spirit, it really resonates with them because they came out of that to try to be healed. The problem is, if you run it the numbers game, the batting average is only like 5%. There's mm-hmm. not a lot of people that actually get healed. You talked earlier about the numbers, the 10,000s. I'm of the opinion that the way that they do this, they are actually counting a legitimate stat, but it's usually the stat of how many people entered the prayer line. Branham mm-hmm. would have people take a prayer card. That was one of the old gimmicks of the old days. You'd take a prayer card, you'd fill your name and address, and you'd say that you're healed, and he would hold them up and say, look, this person was healed. But they were usually healed by positive confession. They claim their healing. Well, that person claimed to be healed, so I can count mm-hmm. them as a number, right? That's the numbers gimmick. They count the healings before the actual healing occurs. And in some cases, I'm certain that there is no count at all. They just look at 10,000 people in a crowd somewhere. But in today's world, they can actually track how many people go through a line with just cameras even. They can count mm-hmm. the people. So there is an actual count, but for me, when I started realizing that out of the people who are claiming to be healed that I was reading about in the newspapers, there were people who were actually trying to verify the healings. It wasn't that they were skeptical at all. They just wanted to see, well, if this person claims to do this, I want to see, can they actually do it? And they were finding things like people arriving in stretchers, coming through the prayer line, being healed, claiming their positive confession, but then leaving on the same stretchers that they came in on. So you can't really count that as a healing, but this movement trained the grandparents and the great-grandparents of our generation that that's how you count a healing, if somebody says mm-hmm. they're healed. And it's just, it really is an adult form of lying. That's all it is.
So here's my argument. Like, I still consider myself a believer, you know, like I know there are things about God that are, you know, mysterious or, you know, yes, there are spiritual things that you can't always explain or whatever. But I think this movement is trying to, they just always try to have like an answer in order to keep it, you know, establish their authority to keep their business, their business going and their profit going, you know, that this is how, you know, we have an answer to your, what ails you. It's always Jesus or whatnot. And a lot of times, like, you know, and it's biblical as well. It's like we live in this world and the world is imperfect. It's atrophying or, you know, entropy, whatever. You know, Jesus talks about that, or the Bible talks about that. And so a lot of times there isn't an answer. Like there isn't a healing. You know, there is death. Like there is bad things that happen. And there are scientific modalities like therapy or whatnot that you can use that I believe God has given us. But even that doesn't work. You know, I know people who have struggled with, you know, mental illness, and they've done everything, you know, like, and even in the world outside of the church, you know, because like people get into this too. There, you know, there's like a big movement right now where people are pushing legalization of psychedelics for like medical purposes or whatever, because there's studies about, you know, heals PTSD. Okay, I'm not saying that that's not true or whatever, but a lot of times people in this that, you know, support that modality of therapy or whatever, it's like it's the end all. Like, and you know, that might not work for this person. And like when you are pushing something is like, this is the answer, it could cause more harm than good. And so I think that like, it's almost like each person is unique, and you know, their everyone's healing journey is different. And you do sort of, in my opinion, I think you rob people of that relationship with God or of that working out your own healing, you know, emotional or whatever it is with, you know, these deliverance ministries where it's like, oh, I've got an answer here. I've got my manual. Okay. This is what's your problem. Like, this is how we walk you through it. And 'cause I have been there, like, the minister I interned for, I remember his wife was like, why are you still struggling with this? You know, like an eating disorder or whatever. We prayed for you and we talked you through it. And I'm just like, oh, like, I guess there's something really wrong with, you know, I'm thinking like, why am I? So then I'm like racking my brain. I'm like, what door did I open? You know, what did I touch? Where did I go? And like we said, and you know, the last time we met, it was, if you can't pinpoint it on an evil spirit, well, then they change it to like, well, you're just so anointed that like the devil's just trying to take you out. And it's just like, so you literally, at least me as growing up in this, like you're stuck, like you're trapped, like it feels oppressive because it's like, I have no way out.
We've mentioned this before, but an apostle in the Bible is somebody who actually saw Jesus. So it's very difficult to have a modern day apostle. But the way they framed the movement, the reason why that exists is because they're going to New Testament scriptures where people were sick and afflicted, and then Jesus came. Mm-hmm. In today's world, there is not Jesus walking the face of the earth. So if you're sick and afflicted, it's very unlikely that Jesus is going to come physically and heal your body. So they have to go to the passages where the disciples and later the apostles were performing great miracles and convincing people to come to the Christian faith. That's the scriptures that they use, but they're not in that role. So it makes it very mm-hmm. difficult. You have to kind of bend the rules of reading the Bible to make that even work. But once it is bent, once you go outside of that framework, now you apply other passages like greater miracles will you do whenever I leave and I send my Holy Spirit. They will say things like, I had more miracles in my ministry than Jesus had. Mm. The problem is, if the miracles were real, that would be, I wouldn't say it factual, but that would be somewhat arguable, because there is a limited number of people who were healed throughout the whole course of the Bible. But for me, the fact that there is a limited number, it shows that there wasn't a widespread thing where you go to a revival, suddenly there's a Jesus or an apostle, and you're going to have these lines of people going through to be healed. That's how the deliverance ministry was framed from its initial form, and it just simply does not match at all. So what they're in effect trying to do is they're trying to say that we are today's replacement for these biblical figures. And to a person who's new to Christianity, that might be okay. If you've never read the Bible, maybe that's okay. But once you do read the Bible, you're faced with the question, well, Jesus is the one that was doing that, not the humans. And the greatest miracles were performed by Jesus. Yes, you can pray, and yes, where two or three are gathered, we can apply that to ourselves. But I don't see anything in the scripture that says what you're saying, preacher, minister. Mm-hmm. And you're faced with that question. I remember being faced with it. And yet I was part of the system. So when I'm part of the system and I'm believing and indoctrinated in what they tell me, I kind of just ignore that type of question, because that's a critical thought. And more to the point, this is where I'm headed with this, they can sense whenever you have this type of question. Somebody can read your face. You can see mm-hmm. that somebody's thinking, they're critically thinking. And then you suddenly say, oh, I'm having a I'm going to say premonition, because that's what they're really doing. I'm having a premonition, you're doubting. You've got the spirit of doubting. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is they equate any critical thinking with a spirit of doubting, and the person gets more fear than the question itself, because they, oh no, I've got a spirit? Really? What have I done to myself? And so it turns into this vicious cycle. You want to be healed, you want to critically think, you want to learn. And what it does for me, and what it did for me, was it hinders your learning. You can't really mm-hmm. learn the Bible like this. You really come to the point where you have to trust what they say about the Bible, because your questions won't, your reading can't really teach you what it says, because they won't allow it.
Yeah, it does. It's interesting. It shuts down your critical thinking. You know, when we were growing up, if you said, like, okay, we're going to have another family prayer time where we have to read through these deliverance cards, and if you complained, like, I don't want to do that, it's like you have a demonic spirit that's like, oh, you don't want the Lord. So it's like, as a kid, you're like, well, okay, well, I don't, like, you want to be, like, your group, it's, like, very human. It's, like, this is my group. These are my caretakers. This is the community that I'm a part of. Like, really don't want to be cast out, you know? So it's, like, you know, or it's, like, I don't think I have a spirit. I just don't want to do this. But you just sort of go along with it, because it's, like, well, you know, what am I going to do? And I'm sorry if I'm taking us off on a tangent, but just hearing you talk about that, you know, and then us sort of looking into this with the deliverance and whatnot. And, you know, I'd mentioned, like, the Kundalini yoga anyway, because I was like, what is that? And so there's actually a documentary on HBO. It's called Breath of Fire. And it kind of follows this Kundalini yoga cult type thing. And one thing I would like to say, like, to anyone, people who feel, like, irritated or, you know, irked by some of the stuff I say, what has, like, really helped me a lot, it's been, like you were saying, like, researching other cults, like, even outside of, like, or high control groups, or just, and you find the pattern or the thread. I mean, that's kind of, like, what, you know, I love history. It's what I studied in college, and that was part of it. You find patterns, you find a thread, and then you kind of, like, pull on it, or you ask a question. You're like, like, this is a totally different group. It has nothing to do with Christianity, but yet the same system, like, some of the same character traits are, I can find that. And so you kind of pull on that. But in that documentary, they were, you know, interviewing parents that had gotten involved, and a lot of times these people had gotten involved, they're hippies, and it's interesting to me, because it's the same time as the Jesus movement. So it's like, where you have hippies that get sucked into the Jesus movement versus hippies that were sucked into, because it was in California, and so you had, like, these gurus, and all, it's like an explosion of, like, just spiritual activity from all different types of groups or whatever. And so, you know, if you weren't sucked into the Jesus movement or whatever, you know, it was whatever this guru was. And so a lot of these people, they grew up, they had their normal life. They went out to California, became hippies, met this guru, joined his cult. Obviously, they didn't realize they were joining a cult. But they had children, and they raised their kids in this. And this documentary interviews the adult children and a lot of the former members who, you know, were adults and then had kids in the movement. And it's, I could relate to the kids, because, you know, some of the parents were like, my children don't speak to me anymore, because there was, like, rampant abuse within this group of the children. But the parents truly, like, they were true believers and trusted their guru, and didn't even think that, you know, anything untoward would be happening to their children or whatnot. And it took them kind of waking up. And so some of the parents who raised their children in it, they've left, but their kids are still in it. So their kids aren't, adult children aren't speaking to them, or the parents that have left, their adult children aren't speaking to them because they left and were like, how could you do this to me? And then it was interesting, like, hearing some of the adult children that grew up in it. They're like, we didn't know any different. Like, we didn't have a choice. Like, you know, and they're like, I'm frustrated because it's like, you, mom and dad, like, you had a life outside of this. You developed a sense of self. And I didn't, like, because this was all I knew and what I was raised in. And so when you kind of come out of it, you're sort of And maybe this that's how you feel the same way too, where it's just like, I don't, you really have to unpack it. So a lot of times too, with this deliverance stuff, as I'm sort of like, what was that? Or what, you know, how do you explain that? There is a lot of like desire just to kind of know and to understand. And in my opinion, I think that it's a way that people have maintained control. And they prey on the youth, whether it's like a YWAM or whatnot. And one thing that the deliverance ministry does, it's like this tool that's like, we can fix you, or look, young person, you can have all this power, like you wield this power. And it keeps you stuck and trapped in those movements. And like we were saying too, it's like, it's trapped in that movement, but then the movement itself, those deliverance ministries or inner healing, do attract mentally ill people who truly need like medical care and support. But then these movements also treat you not to trust anyone outside of it, like, or medical care or whatever it is, that, you know, that it's only through, you know, Jesus and these deliverance movements or whatever. And that, in my opinion, I've seen it, where, not just in my opinion, I've witnessed it, where it makes people go crazier or, you know, and more unhinged, and attracts more and more weird people.
What it does is it accelerates the issue and compounds mm-hmm. it with other issues. We talked, I don't remember if it was you and I or another person, but we're talking about how in this type of ministry, there is a high level of disassociation.
Yes.
You're really trying to involve yourself. You're trying to believe that you're something that isn't there. When mm-hmm. you do this and you do it long enough, you disassociate. But not everybody does. There are other people who just get mentally numb. And I'm mm-hmm. sure there's a better technical term for this, but your mind becomes numb so much that it's not depression. You don't feel anxiety. You're just, it's like nothing really, your senses don't feel anything. I know countless people who describe something like that whenever I was growing up, and I never thought about it. These are the people who would often go to the, you know, the altar calls or whatever. They're trying to get the spirit because they feel like, I'm just so numb. I don't feel anything. Everybody else is crying. Everybody else is praying and shouting, and I feel nothing. Well, the problem is, in some cases, your euphoria is not your neighbor's euphoria. And mm-hmm. so you're not feeling what they're feeling. You can't. It's their emotion. It's their dopamine hit. People who aren't getting that dopamine hit, whether it's critical thinking or whether they're just thinking about something else, suddenly they begin to feel numb. And when they do, they're told, over time, as this develops, they're told that they have an evil spirit. That's why they can't feel anything. Mm-hmm. And then they go back through, like in this list, I'm looking through all of the many things that you can do or you can not do and your family can do to keep you out of the will of God, out of this deliverance. And in many cases, like you said, they just simply had a mental health issue and it mm-hmm. was being compounded by the movement. I think that for those who wander through this type of movement just mentally numb, I think it actually can develop into a much more complex type of trauma than somebody who's just suddenly faced with it and gets out. I could probably say I was one of the people who was more mentally numb, because there came a point when I wasn't really allowed to critically think. And when you can't, and you have a mind that is analytical, you just shut it off. And when you mm-hmm. shut it off, you become numb. Nothing really matters. It doesn't matter if I'm in this group. It doesn't matter if I'm not. And those are the people, ironically, who don't leave, because they just simply, mm-hmm. they're like zombies. I was like a zombie when I was in it. And if I could do anything to change other people so that they're not zombies in this movement, I would do it.
Yeah, that's so funny, because it's like I was the opposite. I feel like the more performative, the more, you know, manifestations you saw or felt, but that also is exhausting, because that, you know, drains you as well, and then keeps you trapped, because it's this feedback loop. And yeah, just like you were saying, there was a constant like rabbit trail of looking for well, what's the open door, or what's the spirit, or who is attacking me? There is a meme going around on Facebook. It's like, I saw like a former IHOPer had posted it, and it was like, here's your prophetic word. And it was like, you're a normal person. And like the whole thing just goes on, like, you have a normal job. You're not meant to be a world changer. You know, this whole thing. And it really speaks to like that generation, like growing up in that, where it's like, not everything is spectacular. Like, and if you read the Bible, like, you see where it's like your normal life. Like, you, it's just, you're working out your salvation. You are the Sermon on the Mount type of living or whatnot, if that's, you know, what you want to believe. But it is, it, the deliverance ministry keeps you stuck. It's one of the modalities and sensational tools that, like you were saying, it truly, it is a fantasy world. It is a fantasy world, and it keeps you trapped. It's like, just like, you know, people laugh and they say, oh, it's like Harry Potter, but it is. Like, I don't know if you've read the books. Like, we weren't allowed to read Harry Potter. But I remember reading it because I was just like, this is ridiculous. And nothing entered me. Although I will say, people in this movement would probably be like, she's blinded by the spirit or that came into her from Harry Potter. And that's what's so frustrating. You can't have a conversation, like an actual like conversation with someone who's in this movement, because it is just like a person who is in a cult. You can't have a logical conversation with like data and data points, because just like someone who's in a cult, like, you're not going to convince them with information. It, you know, whatever, just like Steve Hassan talks about. And so it's the same thing with these extreme charismania, healing, deliverance, you know, Sozo, that inner healing, all that stuff, whether it's through Bethel, Randy Clark, Toronto, all of that, you just, it's impossible. You can't, and they don't want to hear it. And then we'll have and that's the thing too. It's like they will have an answer for everything. And so it is the most brave thing. I'm not saying like, oh, look, we're so amazing, we're so brave, but it is like, I would challenge someone just to like, if you believe in God, like in Jesus, like he is big enough. Like you were saying, he's not a weak God that is dependent upon us to like go through all these deliverance things. It's like, maybe step out of it and, you know, like allow yourself to do something different. And there is that. You will feel like a come down, weird depression. Maybe you'll feel oppressed or whatever, because you're pulling yourself out of a system with that constant like feedback loop. I will say, you know, we attended a Presbyterian church, very traditional, when we were in Virginia. And I had a hard time going to church. I was like, this is so boring. And, you know, the word was good. It was, to me, I was attracted to it in a sense because it was safe. Like, it was a safe community. Checks and balances, like, you know, no one's going to be weird or whatever. Or at least, you know, there's checks to it. But I've really struggled with this, like, how do I talk to God? What is my relationship with God? Because it was always in these grand gestures of like travailing prayer, crying, you know, worship services where you're worshiping for hours and dancing and crying and singing and then kind of stepping out of that. Like, I was burnt out after IHOP KC, completely burnt out. I didn't know it was burnout. Like, I you know, a lot of times too, and with deliverance or whatever it is, it always puts the blame on the person like that's looking for some type of healing or to be set free. Well, you're not walking it out right, or you didn't hold on long enough. If you just held on long enough, like, your breakthrough would have come. Or, I mean, I've emptied savings accounts in my early 20s and teens, in writing what I want on the memo line, write what you want on the memo line, you know, whatever. And still, you know, it's like nothing. So what you do is you end up like being like, gosh, there's something wrong with me, instead of like, maybe there's something wrong with this movement in and of itself. And so just, and allowing yourself to step back from that addictive feeling and sitting with like that, you know, it's less like an addict when they cut themselves off from something they're addicted to. It sucks. Like, you feel sad or like down or empty. There's an empty and you're looking for that. And so I think there, you know, there was that period like at church where, you know, I'm like, ugh, I can't stand it. So a lot of times I just didn't, you know, go. And I think that's fine. You can let yourself do that. You know, God is big enough, because I have seen, like, through like deep friendships that I have, like through, you know, my husband or whatever, like the ways in which God has loved me, spoken to me in very subtle ways through supportive community and miracles, in a sense of a little by little, where I have gotten to be able to critically think, where I do feel like I'm trying to develop a sense of who I am or whatever, outside of like the YWAM, IHOP KC extreme, like where your purpose and whatnot of like going all in with God. So when we moved out here to California, like a year and a half ago, we were church shopping, and against my husband's better judgment, we ended up at like a non-denom mega church. They had a really great kids program, and I was just like, I just miss like really good worship, you know, whatever. So we went, and we don't go anymore, but it didn't hit different. It felt inauthentic. Like, I don't, and again, I'm not trying to like dump on people who love their expressive worship, but it's just been used as such a tool of manipulation in my own personal life, and where I've seen it in other people's lives, where it just keeps you stuck. And then if you start to pull the thread, and you start to see patterns, whether it was in the church's leadership. And like I said, they had, they're like, we're not charismatic, we're not this, we're non-denom. And again, it's this whole deflection of like, they don't want to be held accountable for anything. But then when I see this pastor opens his pulpit up to the pastor of Jesus Culture Sacramento, I was like, no, you know, like, no. And it's it's just this whole, I think, like, the more you know, and it was disheartening to me, because I'm like, you know, I don't know what my, you know, maybe that will never be something I'll return to with like the expressive worship or whatever. And I was even telling my husband, I was like, you know, I have to be really careful in any sort of like emotional or charismatic church environment, because I can fall back into old patterns of like either thinking that, or you learn ways in which, and again, people don't want to hear this, and maybe it's just me, I'm calling myself out, you know, you get attention too from the way you manifest as well. And it gives you that good feeling of like, I'm special, like I'm manifesting, you know, I'm getting this attention. It's that, it makes you feel good, versus like, I would just argue, I think God can handle if you choose to not do that. Or like, I read Harry Potter, the whole Harry Potter series. It was awesome. It was a really good book, and honestly, like, series of books. And I did not get attacked. I did not have nightmare paralysis or whatever. And I think even if I did, like, you know, it's like, that's not because I read Harry Potter, you know. It's like those things, you have to train yourself that way. And I would say, even in, I remember reading whatever book, which book it was, the second or the third, I don't remember. There's parts in the book where I was really like touched, where I was like, this is similar to like the servanthood of Jesus. Like, I'm not saying Harry Potter's Jesus, but like, it's that like self-sacrifice for your friends, or, you know, greater cause or whatever. And it's very similar to the Chronicles of Narnia. And so I just kept thinking about, I'm like, how in the 90s, like, you know, this was demonized. And I'll tell you what led me to read Harry Potter was, you know, growing up, was like J.K. Rowling was like the devil, you know, trying to convert people over into witchcraft and like train them, you know, it's a gateway drug into witchcraft. And now we have this like spate of like kids that are joining, you know, Satanism because of her. But then it's like 5 years during COVID or whatever, the political right, conservatives sort of turned against her. No, excuse me. The left, the progressives, like, I guess because she was saying something about, it was like identity politics. And so then all of a sudden people on the conservative right were like embracing her. And I'm like, okay, It's like the same people that demonized her in the 90s were all of a sudden embracing her. And so it's like, I'm reading this girl, this lady's book. I was like, this is ridiculous, you know? And so it is, it's like the older you get, the longer you've been around, the more you study history, you see these patterns, there is a level of like freedom that you can have from, and I would just, yeah, from stepping out of these destructive groups and cycles, and really learning to trust yourself, and trust that God gave you a brain too, and like you can ask questions, and it's okay.
Well, it's very good advice. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks, John.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.